platform, so you could either like download our mobile app or use it via the website. And the intention really is there's this digital assistant that we were trying to build our version of ChatGPT before ChatGPT, so that was a huge undertaking. But, you know, it was sort of this stigma-free way in which you feel, okay, I'm not going to be judged by a human, but I can ask these questions confidentially, you know, around like, here's what I'm going through, you know, and the digital assistant will kind of point you into, in terms of like, here's some tools or resources that you can utilize to understand what your problem is and take steps towards addressing it. Or it could sort of like indicate to you, actually, maybe you need a bit more professional help. Here's like, you know, we have 1,000 clinicians across Australia and New Zealand, and you can be matched to who's next available, matched to your specific issue. You can book online basically for the next available session, and that's both in person or online. And then what we do is then we aggregate some of that data to kind of help employers manage their psychosocial risk. And what that means is, you know, say, let's just say you're being bullied at work. You don't necessarily want to be the person going to your employer saying that you're being bullied. But if we can aggregate the data that says, you know, 5% of employees are feeling bullied at your workplace, you know, this is higher than the norm, you know, the workplace can start looking at like, okay, how do we put in place policies, or what can we do to kind of really support and reduce bullying from happening in the workplace? So we really want to take both support the individual really well, wherever they are in the journey, but also support organizations to make change that removes the hazards that exist from the context of, you know, workplace making people unwell mentally.
So you've answered potentially a future question I had, because I, you know, when I first sort of looked at your site and you talk a lot about being digital, you know, I was going to say, is this run by humans or are we completely in AI? Because we are starting to see AI pop up in more and more spaces, and for some people that is a concern, and I guess worried about what could AI be doing in the therapy space. But what I'm hearing is AI is kind of the first tool in the toolbox, but you've still got the human therapist therapy processes if needed. Have I read that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what makes us unique is taking that integrated approach. Yeah. I think there are a lot of companies out there, especially now with AI being as hyped as it is, where they're like, oh, we can build all these AI solutions. And ultimately, what's really important is the ability to, as an individual, be connected to the support that you need, whether that's through technology or through seeking a human. But the reality is we tend to fluctuate, you know, like someone who could be really unwell can actually be really good the next day. So it's not that we always need the most, you know, we don't always need to go super nuclear with our solutions every time. But I think the main thing why we sort of were AI first from day one was actually trying to solve the problem, the underlying problem, which was that there was not enough mental health professionals. And so when you look at the statistics based on the workforce versus, you know, the population that will be struggling in any given year, which is about 1 in 5 individuals, there just wasn't enough mental health professionals. So what that means is only like 5% of people who need help in any given year is actually getting it. Mm-hmm. And so we said that, well, there's no way we can 20x our workforce, you know, overnight. So where is the role of AI to bridge the support, and then know when to kind of get the person to see a professional when it's the right time. But also often what we saw in our data is majority, a lot of people actually come on after hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's just say 10, 11, 12 p.m., you know, they finally have a moment of quiet, all the problems of the day comes to their mind and they're thinking about all of that, and that's when they kind of feel all these very uncomfortable emotions, you know, all these negative thoughts. And then, you know, your counselor or your psychologist would be sleeping at 12 a.m. So, you know, how do you then have an ability to kind of reach out to something, get immediate support, and then actually de-escalate and learn the techniques to calm yourself down so that in the next day you can actually be seen by your therapist.
And if you do get seen by a therapist, is that through a video call, or is that continue to be a chat based, or is it a bit of a mixture?
It's completely up to the individual what they prefer, but we still provide majority of our support in person, and we see that even with young people, they still prefer in person options.
Great, awesome. So one of the things I really love, you know, is you're making it so accessible. And you just mentioned, you know, the 2 a.m. different option, and I think we are getting better at that. I think even in the last year since I've seen you, I think of my own medical side, and I go and see my GP now probably once or twice a year, maybe for the big renewal of prescriptions or a big check-in or something I'm concerned about. But I now use a digital doctor and do my prescriptions and things through someone that I can message at 7 o'clock at night, because I know what I need. I don't need them to look at anything. I just need my asthma things renewed, etc. And I'm loving it, where you can wait 2 to 3 weeks to get an appointment these days to see your GP. So I think we've become used to having things more accessible. Surely this is going to move the big barrier of people asking for help. Because if it's available now, it's going to be easier. Where if we're thinking, I need help, but actually it's going to take 3 weeks, so I can't be bothered, we're removing that barrier.
100%. You're absolutely right. But also what we're not teaching them is that you have to be really bad before you get help, because what the system's constantly telling you is that, oh, you're not bad enough, you know, so you just need to wait months before you get seen until you're bad enough. And so we're teaching people actually that something that's unhelpful, versus I think when you have a system that's more accessible, then, and you remove as much of the friction as possible, often, you know, the concept of making sure you sleep well or making sure that you eat and exercise healthily, like, these are not things that you necessarily need to educate people about. Why do people not do it? Because there's so many friction in their life that stops them from doing the right thing. And this is the same thing for your mental health as well. So as long as we make it super easy to help people build habits before they get unwell, make it really accessible, make it really simple, then the ability to kind of make excuses kind of goes down. It's our philosophy.
Speaking of your philosophy, you have some audacious goals on your website. One literally describes it as your big, hairy, audacious goal: to create a digital therapist that can provide support on par to a human psychologist, so that in the next 10 years, high quality mental health care will be truly available to anyone, anytime, or anywhere. So using that digital technology, how are you building this? Is it like many other AI platforms where it's learning by the amount of queries it's getting, the answers, etc.? How do you build this? How do you reach this goal?
Yeah, you're totally right. So, you know, we obviously benefit a little bit from some of the improvement in technology, so that, you know, when we first started out, it really was, you know, you have to, you know, like if you think about building a house, you have to build everything by yourself, you know, the plumbing, everything, you know, wire all the electricity yourself. And I think with the development of some of these AI technology, it just means that it's almost like quite modular. You could kind of plug some of these things in. But what we won't compromise on is sort of the clinical rigor side of things. So often when you look at these sort of mainstream AI solutions, they tend to not be trained on mental health data. They tend to be trained on, say, social media data. So being able to pick up context, intention, sentiment, all those kind of things in a way that is specific to mental health is really important. So those are the things that we review constantly. And then sometimes there is also a margin of errors with AI, right? So when you think about why AI isn't necessarily going to replace all the professional services out there, it comes down to what is your risk tolerance, right? So AI is very good, but it's not 100% foolproof. And so what we then work on is those times when AI is uncertain about its response, and then we have a clinician kind of review the response, and and then, as you said, teach the AI whether it's done the right thing or not. And of course it can continue to learn as it gets more data and it and more I guess experience with dealing with the variety of mental health conditions that are out there. But yeah, it's basically it's very much a guided approach to how we train the system, so that it is safe, so that it is effective and it is clinically relevant to mental health.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Where do you see our mental health sort of state, if you like, in our workforce today?
Yeah, you and I had a bit of a conversation about this shift, and I completely agree with you that it used to be when you are struggling with things that are going on at home or even at work, you sort of put it aside at the door, you don't bring it up. What we definitely have seen is a generational shift where, especially the younger generation, they are bringing their challenges that they're experiencing into the workplace, whether that is personal, you know, I just broke up with my boyfriend and I, you know, I'm sad all the time and I don't feel like working. And you as a manager then need to feel like, how do I motivate this employee while, you know, being respectful of boundaries and also being empathetic to that they are struggling.
And perhaps, I mean, I took it when we talked before the show, it almost there's a bit of a negative that people are not switching off like they used to, but actually perhaps it's a positive that they feel comfortable to show their feelings, actually show where I'm at today, where there probably was a time you wouldn't dare. You know, I know a manager who every morning the staff have to walk past her office, say good morning and give a number out of 10. And that's all they have to do, and then they walk to their desk. And if they are 8, 9 or 10, she wishes them a good day. If they're a sort of 4 to 7, she's going to just check in that everything's cool. And if they're a 0 to 3, she whips them out for coffee at some point in the morning to check in, you know. And so maybe it's actually a good thing.
I think that's so great. And it is just that, you know, that daily check-in is what is, you know, when you think about building habits, this is a form of habit that the manager has built as part of her capability of managing this new workforce expectation. And you're right. I think that before we think it's simpler that we don't know about all these things. But the reality is actually, it's very hard to solve problems if you don't actually understand that. And so it's not that back in the day when you didn't talk about your problems that these employees were parking it at the door and then coming to work all productive and happy and they're
they
not
were just
there.
Good at hiding it.
They were just good at hiding it, but they were definitely distracted. They were not as productive and a whole bunch of things. And so at least this way you know, okay, is it personal reasons? Is it work reasons? And I think there is increasing, I guess, accountability in workplaces to kind of say that, you know, it's not enough that we pay you for your job, but actually that it is also part of our responsibility to ensure we create environments in which you can do your best work and you can thrive. And that will allow us to actually do better as a society when we spend so much time at work, to have work actually be a place where you can be your best self. When maybe for, and that is true, for some people, work is their solace. You know, for some people, their personal lives are so chaotic that coming to work is a safe haven for them. And as much as we can create that for people, it's another way in which society becomes more resilient.
And I think it's also a value to know that you could come to work with an issue and you're valued so much that they will provide some support for you, even though your issue has nothing to do with work. But as you say, it's going to infect, you know, not infect, impact, thank you, your productivity, etc., you know. So if a CEO or manager is listening to this, how do they engage with Clearhead? Walk us through sort of that process.
Yeah, so we provide the support as part of an annual subscription. So you bring us on and then we onboard your organization, give you all the sort of collateral that you need to launch Clearhead into the business. I think what we have seen, and I'll give you sort of a feedback that we got recently that was really powerful. So an organization recently brought us on and they passed on this feedback that one of their employees was struggling with potentially having ADHD for 3 years. And they had, you know, been over the last 3 years been thinking about, like, you know, why is it that I don't, you know, connect with my children the way that I would think I could? Or why is it that I can't do the work the way I thought I should? And they've been sort of in the back of their mind thinking, oh, is it ADHD? Is it autism? Like, they weren't sure. And basically, when the workplace brought us in, they communicated about what mental health means in a much more holistic way. And what that gave that employee permission is to feel like, actually, I don't have to struggle in silence. Maybe it would be beneficial for me to ask for help, to understand what's going on, and, as you said, to be supported and valued in my journey, because, you know, it was really affecting me. And imagine if... And to me, I always think about it as like, imagine if they had something like ClearHit in place, that employee wouldn't have had to wait 3 years because they weren't confident with their previous provider. So I think a large part of the value we bring as well is like how to communicate what mental health means in the workplace, less from a deficit model, you know, and less from an illness model, and more, less from this like cold clinical model, to actually what does it mean for you as an individual to feel that you've got a personal touch to really, I guess, architecting the type of life that you want to live. And it's not a shame to not be ashamed to need to ask for help sometimes to get to that point.
So once the employers have set it all up, how easy is it for the employees? Are they given sort of X amount of engagements that they can do a year, or how does that all work? Like, a lot of companies will, you know, provide counselling to a point, or will provide something to a point. How does it work? Or does each company tailor that with you?
Yeah, we obviously need to work with each company, because each company also has their financial budget that they're balancing as well. Obviously, from our end, we've been able to demonstrate, you know, for every dollar you spend on ClearHit, you get $4 back in terms of return on investment. We've seen for a lot of our companies reduction in employee turnover, all that kind of stuff. But still, you kind of have to balance the budget. And so it's up to the employer, for example, to set how many sessions they want to fund for their employees. But one of our clients actually really cool, they provide unlimited therapy for their employees and family members, and they've recently won the sort of best workplace to work.
And family members, so not just the people.
It's really taking, again, you know, if you think about from a Māori perspective, this concept called te whare tapawha, you know, by recognizing that we don't exist as individuals, but we actually exist within a community, that even if we're fine, but if our child is struggling, or if, you know, we're having sort of domestic, romantic issues, all of those things affect us. And if we can support these family members to get the support that they need, it means that we can continue to, you know, not be distracted by that.
This is probably a bit of an unusual question, but I think of our listening demographic, and we have a lot of older managers and older people that would listen to the show and go, well, what would someone need to see a therapist about? Is it just relationship stuff? Is it bullying? What sort of things do you find, or topics do you find get covered in therapy sessions?
It's the full gamut of life, to be honest. I think, obviously, most people still associate seeking professional help as something that you do as a last resort. Oh, when I'm having suicidal thoughts, or when I'm being made redundant, or when I'm going through the divorce. When basically people associate you use professional help when things get so bad that it's sort of some sort of, you know, mental breakdown or crisis. And what we're increasingly starting to see is people being much more proactive about how they think about that. It's the same way that you wouldn't expect an athlete to be performing at their peak without a coach. Why wouldn't you think about your personal life as something you want to, you know, allow for peak performance, right? And so it can be something as simple as, I want to be a better dad, or I want to have a better relationship, or I want to have better control of my emotions when things don't go the way that I expect it to. Again, this is not necessarily that something is broken. You just know that you are not quite, you know, fulfilling your full potential, and you just need a little bit of guidance to kind of, you know, help you, you know, look at the patterns in your life, unblock you, and then take the steps in which you can address it. And if I think about my own personal growth this year, I spent a lot of that time thinking about how I am communicating to both people at work, but also in my personal life. And so it's not necessarily that like things were going badly at work or at home. It was more that I felt like for me to grow the business to that next stage, I need to level up as a leader. And there were moments of bottleneck in my ability to do that because of the way that I was communicating, because of the way that I was responding to challenges that were happening at work. And so it's been a real joy for me to personally reflect on, say, the last 9 months of this year and how I used to respond to challenges before I went on this journey, and then how I respond today. And it's not that I've been doing self-work for at least 10 years, but really being guided by a coach and has been really awesome. And I only started that this year.
That's cool. Do you test out your different therapists? You could like ask the same question to 3 or 4 and see what their response is.
Well, we do actually encourage you to pick one. And obviously if you pick one and you just couldn't get a good vibe or you couldn't feel comfortable, then you know we would support you to find someone else. And that's a core part of what makes ClearHit different, is that we really take the time to match you to the right therapist. And it's what we call the therapeutic alliance, which means that you're actually going to get the clinical outcomes you want, achieve the objectives that you have set up when you sort of seek professional help, if you're actually going to feel comfortable with the person. You feel listened, you feel empowered, and you are given the skills that you need. And it is just a little bit harder if you're trying many different things. And so it's just for you to build that sort of relationship, professional relationship, it generally we recommend sticking to one. And I think what you hear as well is that, you know, these mental health professionals end up being a space in which you can bring up your deepest, darkest fears and questions that you might never even share with even your spouse of 50 years, you know?
Yeah. Since we last caught up, you've introduced a new thing called Match Me. What is Match Me?
Yeah, it's pretty much a digitized version of what I've just said. So in the past, we kind of, you know, either left you to your own device and you had to figure out how to find the right person for you. Or you give us a call and we would say, oh, based on what you've shared with us, this is what you could do, or in terms of this is the best person for you. But Match Me, I guess, is trying to bridge the gap between sort of that, you know, trying to figure it out yourself versus having to give us a call, by really helping you understand what your needs are and then narrowing down the options so that you can then not feel overwhelmed by, oh, there's 50 therapists in my area that I could see, which should I pick? But actually by deeply understanding you and taking the time to match you, it would be just as powerful as any sort of like dating app, for example, matching you to the right person.
Are you matching sort of the person or specialist in certain fields? So if you were having an issue around, you know, divorce or whatever, there'd be certain people that's a skill area of theirs?
Yes, so that's one element of what we match against. But also, if you think about the fact that often non-European New Zealanders tend to be underrepresented in terms of the ability to get the help that they need, being able to match in a way that allows for the care that you get is culturally responsive to maybe the fact that you're a migrant or that you're Māori, you're dealing with the past trauma of colonization, or, you know, there's a whole gamut. Or maybe it's just about, you know, you are exploring your sexuality and you want to see someone who would be LGBT friendly. You know, all of those things play a factor in how well you feel supported, and we match across all those dimensions.
Now, we're talking very personal information. Talk me through your data protection. What have you done to make sure ClearHit is nice and safe?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the key things is about really reassuring people that we put their data security and privacy as number one. So we are currently completing an international standard on that. It's called ISO 27001. But basically, the premise behind it is, you know, that very clear role accessibility. So only the people who really need to see any data for supporting you will get to see it. But otherwise, everything is encrypted. So all the self-help side of things, all the all of that's encrypted and basically reduces the chance of people hacking it or anything like that. And, you know, when providing any sort of reporting, as I say, it's always at an aggregated level. It's never like John.
Right. Was, so it's all stripped away. So 100%. Because something you do promote on your website is, you know, information for HR departments, statistics. So that is all stripped away. There's 100%. No personal information, but you're able to see this sort of the state of mental health.
Exactly. Yeah. It'd be like, you know, your overall organizational well-being is, say, 56% out of 100%. And there are three core areas, you know, people are feeling burnt out, you know, because of workload or because they don't feel that they have the manager support that they need. Really drilling down to what you as an organization can do to improve the situation.
Without saying, go see John in the corner because he's having a bad day.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's cool. How can managers encourage staff to think about mental well-being?
Yeah, I think...
Because it is a term that gets bandied around a lot, you know, but how do we, as a manager, encourage our staff to think about this?
Look, I think the number one thing you could do is to do that for yourself. You know, what are you as an individual like? How are you taking care of your well-being? And then really using that as a form of role modeling, you know, by if you, for example, share with your direct reports that, you know, I'm having a really bad day today. You know, my child was up all night because they were sick and I'm just not feeling like my best. So if I'm a little bit short at you, I'm sorry, you know, like, and so you immediately you humanize yourself as a manager or people leader that you're not infallible and that life happens to you too.
Yeah.
And you can acknowledge it. And people are also going to be more empathetic and supportive to you. But then also then when you are sharing, like, for example, we have some of our organizations destigmatize mental health support so much that, you know, people will talk about which therapist they're seeing at after work drinks. So that's really cool, right?
Yeah.
Like being able to say, like, oh, this really works for me. And again, you never know who's listening. And that basically reduces the barrier because now someone listening goes like, oh, it's not that hard to ask for help. Or, oh, when you ask for help, it is helpful. Or like, oh, okay, that's the process. People are listening whether you realize it or not. And so you as a manager being able to role model what it means to acknowledge when you're struggling with your mental health, to share what works for you in terms of what helps you stay well. All of those things are really powerful. The other thing that is really important in the context of managers and people leaders is the number one thing is around practicing a skill called active listening. And this is a tool that we've developed on ClearHit that you can practice on. But really, it's this idea of, like, can you listen from a space where you're not listening to respond? So a lot of people kind of listen to someone's problem and then the whole time they're just thinking about, like, here's what I'm going to reply.
Yeah.
Versus just actually being in the moment, paying attention to the individual. And often when people sort of reach out for help, they don't necessarily want you to sort of save them or give them advice. Sometimes it's just being
a
listener.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then so if you do feel like you want to give advice, you can ask them, you know, I have some thoughts on what could potentially help. Is this, you know, do you want me to share it or do you just want me to listen today? And then you give them agency on where they are on in their journey. And that's also kind of like, you know, why we were really, when we were designing our solution from first principle, was thinking about, like, how empowering is it that when your life feels like it's falling apart and nothing's going your way, you don't have any control on anything, the first step to recovery is having the autonomy to pick who supports you, right? Like, so it's little things like that where we can be super intentional. So you as a manager, what can you do? One, you can role model. Two, you can be a better listener and practice the skills to be a good listener. And then three, you know, equip yourself with understanding what are the support systems or services that are out there, whether it's at your workplace or in the public system, that you can then refer, you know, your direct reports to if what they're trying to do, well, what they're struggling with is, you know, beyond sort of simple... Simple, you know, being there and listening. And the main thing to kind of also remember is, like, you know, don't feel guilty. You know, like, it's not your responsibility to solve people's problems. What you can do is be a good listener and then refer them on.
Play to your strengths.
Set those boundaries.
Yeah. Now, you've been running for 6 years and we caught up a year ago. So what's happened in your workspace, like staff-wise? Are you looking for more therapists? You mentioned Australia before. Where are you growing? How are you growing? Tell us about the business side.
Yeah. So we are really growing well in Australia, and that was kind of cool for us to kind of expand beyond New Zealand, because we know this is a global problem and sort of our ambition is to kind of help everyone globally, but, you know, we want to do it in a sustainable way. So that's kind of continues to be our mission, is to expand across New Zealand and Australia. We're really thinking about what it means to support you know, like the small, medium-sized businesses as well, because often they are the ones that have very little resources. But
they don't have an HR department often. Yeah, it's the manager running that. Yeah,
exactly. They don't have an HR department. They don't have 5 well-being programs that they're rolling out. You know, they just want one good thing that will be cost-effective for them, but also like of a high quality that supports them when the problems appear, kind of thing. So that's kind of we're working on making that process as easy as possible for small and medium-sized businesses to bring on Clearhead.
Cool. That's awesome. Anything else coming up on the horizon when I interview you in a year's time? What will you have done? What will you have done?
Oh, well, hopefully we will continue to grow our impact, tell good stories about the, you know, the value of really investing in your people's mental health and the overall organizational impact that has, and that we're playing a critical part in the ecosystem to make people stay well. And if we help the people who are helping others stay well, then, you know, it's a virtuous cycle. So really excited about increasing our impact and the chance to share our progress. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That is so cool. Now, our show replays over the Christmas season. So if someone's listening to this in January, where are you? Where does your mental health go over Christmas? Do you put your feet up and relax?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go on a holiday. I'm going to go to Taiwan for a holiday, actually.
Nice. Do you find Christmas is that time that, though, can impact people's mental health for a negative reason, not a positive?
Absolutely.
Financial
pressure is one big one, but the other thing as well is these relationships that we kind of avoid, but then it all comes to a head.
The in-laws are coming to stay, yeah.
Yeah, there's like enclosed spaces for a period of time in which it can be very confronting for people. If you work on yourself, you will be better able to understand what's triggering you and then how can you respond in a way that's not going to lead to a big blowout, and then next time Aunt Jenny's not going to be invited to Christmas anymore. So, you know, we want to avoid all of that. And yeah, and you know, Clearhead is available mainly for employees through funded by their employers as an EAP program, but you know, we do have an option in which the general public can get support through us, and you just have to self-fund, but that option is available.
And we talked about that before we went to air about teenagers and parents that might be struggling with the long wait list to get inside a counsellor, etc. They can self-fund on your website.
That's right.
So where do people head to find out more about Clearhead or about you and follow what you're up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is myclearhead.com. And I'm on LinkedIn. And my name's Angela Lim, and it's been a pleasure to share what we do.
That's fantastic. Love having you and love checking in. We'll look forward to catching up in a year's time again, see what's happening. Hopefully we've shifted that dial in mental health space in the workplace. Thanks so much. Head to myclearhead.com for more information.
Thank you.
Now, next week, if you're an investor, we've got our favourite mortgage broker and advisor, Tapri Hewitt, back to join us for another week. Following that, the week after, we've got the fabulous Nicole Lewis in, author and investor, to chat all about that space. Have a fabulous week. Enjoy the start of October. Hope that sun keeps coming out. Take care. See you next week.
Your language, your interests, your community on planetaudio.org.nz.
That's a Joe Cocker classic with a powerful message. That word respect packs a punch. It means so much. Openness, honesty, feeling safe every day. They are the values of Mental Health Radio Take It From Us, an award-winning show about psych stuff. We're wanting to spread healthy and holistic wellness and mental health insights. Listen Tuesdays at 12:30 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/Take It From Us. Even listen on your mobile.
Property Matters will be back again next Monday from 4:15. Kei te whakarongo mai koe ki Planet FM 104.6. Next up, we have a commercial-free music break, taking you right through till 6:35 p.m. when ex-Tonga High School students present their hour of interviews, commentary and community updates on Te Fua Wakalautala.